Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. And as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hello, I'm Gita Llewellyn, Swansea City fan and also contributor to the Jackcast, which you can find on Twitter at the Jackcast.
Hi, I'm Dan, Arsenal fan. You can get me on Twitter at @the_jersey_fits.
Hi, I'm Sean Whetstone. I'm a happy hammer at West Ham Football on Twitter. I'm also on More Than Just a Podcast, and that's Bobby Moore, M-O-O-R-E. And I also write for a West Ham site called Clarence Hugh.
All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys. Up first, of course, we have Making the Rounds, where we each have a few minutes to discuss what's been happening at our clubs this week. Gitto, what a week to have you on. You go to Liverpool, you pull out a win, which helps everybody else's title chances, and it pulls you out of the relegation zone. How excited were you after that match?
It was brilliant. I'm so glad that I could come on and finally talk about something good related to Swansea City Football Club. It was brilliant and it was completely unexpected. Since our kind of anomaly result on the opening day against Burnley at Turf Moor, the only teams we've beaten are Sunderland and Crystal Palace. So to go to Anfield, where Liverpool are unbeaten in over a year, you know, they're in the top four. Okay, they're not in the greatest run of form, but you know, we've been so poor against the top teams this season, and we've been poor against everybody. Let's face it, just lost 4-0 to Arsenal, and then to go to Anfield and do what we did, it was incredible, and it was the kind of performance that we haven't actually seen from the Swans in a very, very long time, and the kind of performance I actually didn't think we were capable of anymore. In the sense that it was very, very disciplined. We kept our shape fantastically from start to finish. Usually, you know, when we've played like that this season, I've said, oh, it's just a matter of time until we lose our shape. But no, we were very, very well organized throughout that, and we did frustrate Liverpool quite a bit. I know they scored two goals, but usually we concede 3, 4, or 5, so even that's a positive. But it was great. We showed the right kind of attitude. First half, we just frustrated Liverpool. Kept things pretty tight, and then took our chances in the second half. I thought Llorente bullied Liverpool centre-backs and really controlled the game pretty well as a striker. Scored two very, you know, poacher's goals. You know, sorry for using a cliche. In fact, the entire team was really good, but I want to give special credit to the two new players in the team. Martin Olsen kind of showed us what we all knew we were lacking with Neil Taylor at left back, because he had a very good game defensively, but also going forward, it just made such a difference to have a fullback that actually wants to attack and who can actually contribute effectively to attacks. That was a great, great relief. And then Tom Carroll, who, you know, I don't think many people in Swansea were sort of massively excited, but when he came, I didn't think he was a player that was going to really change our season much. He didn't seem that different to what we had. Seemed like a bit of a vanilla signing, if I'm honest. But I thought he had a very good second debut against Liverpool. I thought he was up for the fight in midfield, passed it pretty well. And you know, played a big hand, had a big hand in those second and third goals. It was just such a positive result. But the performance too, to go with it, it's something which has given us renewed hope that we may actually be able to stay up this season. I mean, we're out of the relegation zone now for, only the second time since October, and the last time we were only out there for a matter of days before we dropped back into it. So hopefully now we can build on the positives that we saw against Liverpool and actually make a good fight of this, because until recently it looked like we were going down with a whimper.
Yeah, something I wanted to bring up was in the lead up to this match, Jurgen Klopp said that he was very impressed at how Paul Clement had already been able to make such significant changes to how Swansea were playing. We've already heard Martin Olsen come out and say that he's super exhausted from your training sessions, which was not the case for him at Norwich. As a Swansea fan, is it really that noticeable already, the change in maybe mentality at the club?
If we're going by just one game against Liverpool, yeah, the change is massive. I mean, I don't know if he had any kind of impact against Crystal Palace when we won 2-1, when he came down from the stands to join Alan Curtis in the dugout. But, there was a bit more fight on show that day. But it was against a really poor Crystal Palace side. I mean, a team that has been as bad as us all season, really, almost. Against Arsenal, you could see what he was trying to do in terms of tactics, in the sense that in that first half we were a lot more compact. We kept the ball far better without, just trying to get it forward too quickly and losing it. We were a lot more just careful with possession against Arsenal than we were under Bob Bradley. We just looked... For 45 minutes anyway, we did look a little bit more solid against Arsenal. Of course, when Arsenal eventually decided to turn up in the second half, they blew us away. But you could see what Clement was trying to do in that game. And I thought against Liverpool, you saw those same tactics, but executed far better by the players. They looked far more comfortable with those tactics than they did against Arsenal. And, this is a team which has looked defensively inept all season, but again, I know we conceded 2 goals against Liverpool, but we were far better in that respect. We closed Liverpool down in the danger areas, and really forced them into some errors, which again we just have not been doing. And I've complained all season that we've been very, very easy to play against, far too easy to play against, really. But that wasn't the case against Liverpool. I obviously we gave them a very difficult game to the point where we actually managed to get a shock result. Clement's identified problem areas in the team, and he's, we've said before, he's a coach. His background is really in coaching rather than management, but apart from a very short spell with Derby. And I think these players did need a lot of coaching. I think... It is starting to show. I don't know if it was really showing that clearly before we played Liverpool, but it certainly is now.
Awesome. Well, as we mentioned on some of those more depressing podcasts, I think Swansea are a club that a lot of neutrals kind of have a soft spot for. So it's nice to see things hopefully turning around for you guys. Dan, a little less pleased to see things going well for Arsenal. It was a tough match against Burnley, but you did pull out the win. It's kind of been a while since we've had you on. What's been going on over at Arsenal?
Well, I can't remember if the last time was... I think it was after Everton, but, I mean, I don't think we're going to win the league, but I never really did. Chelsea are just insane this season. But overall, it's been okay. Like, it's weird, because you kind of go from thinking... maybe we're not going to finish top four to, maybe we'll finish second. Like, we can finish anywhere between 2 and 6. And, any result from any team kind of changes the emotions, just because it's so tight up the top outside of first this year, just because there's a lot of good teams. But for this week against Burnley, it was a pretty routine match for a while, and then it wasn't. First half was... the entire game was very much a Burnley game where, they'll bunker in and... if you're the team that's not Burnley, you'll have a lot of shots, just not very good shots. And then eventually you hope you can break them down and score a goal on a not great chance. And eventually in the second half we did, but from Skodran Mustafi's first Arsenal goal, Ozil assist, even though he didn't really do anything other than put in the corner. But a very, very, very good header, must be said. I'm not sure if you guys have seen it, but the angle he got on that header was stupid. It was very, very good. But yeah, it was not the way you expect to score against Burnley, but it happens. That put us 1-0 up. And we were, again, we weren't carving them apart, but we were in control. They barely did anything up until Granit Xhaka went and got himself sent off after having a very good game up until then. But yeah, he got himself sent off for a tackle, which there wasn't a lot of contact, but like it's fair to send him off. He did go in with 2 feet. I can't begrudge it too much. So yeah, it happened. And then even after we went down 10 men, it wasn't that bad until I think we had a decent chance right before the penalty to put it to go up 2-0 and put the game away. But then they went and got a penalty because Francis Coughlin didn't realize Ashley Barnes behind him, kicked up, trip, penalty, clear penalty. Although earlier in the game, John Moss, right before our goal, he did miss what should have been a penalty on Mustafi. But again, we scored like 2 minutes after with that player even. So I'm not sure how much I can complain about that, even if it's a missed call. But I would definitely complain about it if we didn't win. But yeah, so Andre Gray goes and scores. Arsene Wenger, I think at this point, had already been sent off to the stands and may or may not have pushed Anthony Taylor. He did. He's been charged today.
He came out and admitted that he did, so.
Yeah, no. Yeah. But yeah, what was it? He built the stadium. He can do what he wants. yeah, he's been charged by the FA today. I don't know what that was going to come of that, but we'll see. We'll make Jose Mourinho happy. But yeah, Osrega converts the penalty. And I mean, things had already got silly at this point, and then they got even sillier, in what would have been the 96th minute, I think. Ben Mee fouled Laurent Koscielny, but Laurent Koscielny was offside, so it shouldn't have been a penalty, but it was. And Alexis Sanchez goes and half Panenka's the penalty to give us another horribly jammy, cheaty win against Burnley this season. So that was really funny. But yeah, so all's well that ends well, even if it got really crazy in the last 10 minutes.
Or something. I loved how many of the commentators were talking about how ice in the veins Sanchez was with that penalty
like
right up the middle.
Copa America.
Exactly. Like, we've seen this already in higher
stakes.
Come on,
guys. Yeah. He's a crap penalty taker, too. Like, I was not confident that was going in.
He's
not a good penalty taker. I think he's 3-for-6 career now.
Oh, that's interesting.
He's not good at all.
I do agree with you.
Actually, that's the first penalty he scored for Arsenal. He's missed the other two.
Oh, wow. I do agree with you on some of the referees' decisions. So, I think both penalties were penalties.
I think all the decisions were pretty clear cut, other than like you could kind of argue the red card because he didn't make a lot of contact. But even then,
what was that?
Sorry, but my phone kept going on silent.
Oh. No worries. I have to come to you with a thing. All right. You also mentioned that Xhaka got this red card, which does mean he'll miss matches. That while it was a little, it could have been conceived as like there's no way it's going to get rescinded. You've kind of already been rotating your central midfield lots of times. What is your best pairing there?
Should I count Santi Cazorla or not? Because he may or may not be dead.
When is there a timetable for him to return?
God knows. I don't know. He was supposed to come back in like February last year and didn't come back till April or May. So I'm just kind of
so I'm not
waiting
counting on him
back. Yeah, I'm not gonna put any real faith in that. But so I'll do it without Cazorla, and then with Cazorla, it's probably Xhaka and Cazorla. Without, I'd say the Xhaka and Ramsey. Maybe Elneny and Xhaka, but we haven't really seen that a lot. So, and Xhaka and Ramsey's been pretty decent for the last couple of games, so I'll go with them. Everyone here who's ever listened to this podcast knows how I feel about Coughlin. I don't think he works with anyone outside of Cazorla.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is what it is. But he's going to play, so we'll get to see it, whether I want to or not.
Do you think that as it is at the moment that you are pushing for a title, or are you just one of, as you mentioned, the many behind Chelsea just hoping for one of those top four spots?
I think no one is pushing for the title outside of Chelsea. Maybe Liverpool, but...
I mean, they have Liverpool and you the next 2 weeks. So it could get interesting.
Yeah, I know. I'm just... I'm not confident of anyone outside of Chelsea winning the title. If I'm putting percentages in my head, I have Chelsea at like 70-75% to win the title right now. I'm pretty convinced.
Fair enough. Sean, the Payet thing was the big news that we didn't address yet, but since then, West Ham have actually been playing fairly well. Manuel Lanzini has looked really good. Andy Carroll finally found the scoring boots. What's kind of happened with this little renaissance that's been happening at West Ham?
Sorry, who's that? Payet? Who's Payet? He's dead to me.
Never heard of him. Yeah.
Look, you know, there's nothing more I can add to Payet. There's no way back for him. We're likely to accept 28 million the next few days and he'll be off. However, you know, this has galvanized the fans. We had our problems at London Stadium. It's galvanized the players and we've won back-to-back games. True, against poor opposition, you know, Palace and Borough not playing their best football. And of course, we've got City next. But that's not just, it's not just about Payet. You know, we're missing Chiarty at the Akon and our record signing AU as well. So, you know, three big players missing. Four if you include Sacco as well, one of our best strikers. And yet we're still getting the results. We were in the top 10 of the table for the first time since August. We've got 28 points. 3 weeks ago, we were in 18th position. It's a crazy, crazy world. Look, are all the problems Payet? You know, people are coming out, you know, calling him a fat frog and saying we should sell him by the kilo and everything. It's funny how you can turn to hero to zero in no time at all. Hmm. Was Payet all of our problems? Absolutely not. But you know what? I'm not going to look too deeply behind it. Why weren't other players playing well? Why weren't we getting behind the team? Why weren't we getting the results? Who cares as long as we're winning? So long may it go on, you know, big win against Palace, against our old manager, which was a bit, you know, even sweeter with Sam Allardyce. And a 3-1 away win. And I'm sure, I hope you've mentioned the won the goal of the millennium by Andy Carroll.
Don't you mean Olivier Giroud?
Don't you mean Della Olli?
Even though,
no.
Whiplash. I mean, the problem is, you know, we have to wrap Andy Carroll up in cotton wool.
Yeah.
You know, he got a whiplash injury from scoring that goal, and he gets a groin injury and goes off after scoring two goals on Saturday. So, you know, we just don't want him. Even, you know, his trademark slide along the floor. He's been told by the club not to do that anymore in case he hurts his knees. So as long as he's fit, look, two wins, 6 points, no Payet. Fonte, you know, it comes out that Obonna has been playing injured all season, has been playing on painkillers in his knees, and we get Fonte from Southampton for £8 million. Still haven't got a right back. And they're even talking now, do we need a striker? Because, you know, we've got Andy Carroll on form and we've got Sacco about to come back.
Mm.
So do we need this fabled 20-goal striker? You know, I think in a weird way, Payet doing what he did has brought the fans and the players together in a way that couldn't be imagined a few weeks ago. And maybe he sacrificed himself. But, you know, you can imagine, right? Someone worshipped the way he was and in the player he was. Would West Ham fans, if someone had said to you, West Ham fans are going to hate him, they're going to sing songs about him, they're going to deface signs of him, that they will need guards at the London Stadium, you'd say they're mad. You know, how can you drop from such a high point? But, you know, refusing to play, all right, he's got family issues. The way that Slaven Bilic announced it at that press conference, if I was a conspiracy theorist, I would say the whole thing was stage managed. But I'm sure it wasn't. And I'm sure Bilic is an honest man. And we are where we are. And life goes on without Payet.
Yeah. It certainly was a very strange one from an external perspective, especially the way it was handled. So now you're in 10th after having been relegation candidates, a month ago? Where do you think the truth is somewhere in the middle? Or do you think that you really could be pushing for the top half now?
Well, do you know what? I was just doing a financial piece because one of the things I do on my blog is financials. So So I don't know if you know this, but you get £2 million a place. So it's really interesting whether you should invest in players. But every place you get, we're in 10th, right? 10th this year. If you have 15 games on the TV, everybody gets 85 million, right? 15 games, £1 million a game, 15 million. And you'd get another like merit payment of 2 million per point. So you'd get another 20 million from doing that. So you get something like 122 million for finishing 10th this year, 128 million for finish 7th, and so on. Whoever wins the champion league, whoever champions of the Premier League this year will get 150 million. Whoever comes last this year will get 97 million. So there is massive amount of money to play for this season. And this is why people are saying, do you know what? It might be worth paying extra in this transfer window, because if it makes a difference of one or two places, that can pay for the transfer in its own right. And so going back to your question, yeah, I think we can push on from there. I never really thought we were relegation candidates, but I hope we can push on. Look, let's not be kidding ourselves. We're not a top six team this year, but 7th, 8th, or 9th is achievable. And let's push on with a little bit of luck and a lack of injuries and Andy Carroll staying fit and Sacco coming back and staying fit. And Lanzini, I think, has stepped into a role, the jewel, as they call him, coming in to take over from Payet on his corners, on his free kicks. I'm sure you saw that little chip that was sort of Payet-esque against Palace. And, of course, Mikel Antonio coming in, not just being the goal king, the top goal scorer, but getting three assists against Palace. So I think other players who were in the shadow of Payet, where everything was written around Payet, the whole team was around Payet, people are now starting to shine. I think there's no reason in the second half of the season we can push on and get 9th, 8th, or 7th.
Yeah. For Tottenham, we had an interesting one against Manchester City this week. The team selection at the start was pretty unsurprising for us, although a lot of people were trying to convince me that Davis was going to start ahead of Wimmer, and their argument was that Davis plays in a back three for Wales. My argument for Wimmer is, he replaced Vertonghen for 2 months for Tottenham last season. Wimmer did get the shot, although he was not great, and ended up being removed at halftime. City, on the other hand, put out a very attacking lineup from the off, and I really thought we were going to be able to kind of batter them, because that has not helped them in the past. I think they did a similar thing against Leicester, and that was that match when Leicester finally showed up for what felt like the first time this season. It ended up being a really good idea from Pep Guardiola, who has been catching a lot of flack in the media lately. They came out guns blazing. We were on back heel for the majority of that match. Managed to get into halftime at 0-0. Like I said, we took off Wimmer, brought on Son, who was an excellent sub again for us. He's like a faster, less Serbian Niko Kranjčar from days of old for us. I thought he did very well, but Hugo Lloris was... this is his worst match that I can really recall in recent memory. The two errors that he made were heinous. The one, you can kind of understand, he was trying to clear a ball that was like right on the edge of the box, and he didn't know if it was in or out, so he didn't lead with his hands, he led with his head. Then basically hit it right into Leroy Sané, who was able to just walk it in. Pochettino arguing that it was a handball by Sané, but the whole hand to ball or ball to hand argument, I think, comes into play there. I mean, there's no way Sané had time to really react. I think it was just the natural swing of his arm while he was running, so I do think it would have been harsh if they had taken that away from them. And then he followed it up with another blunder where he tried to smother a ball and just didn't. And then De Bruyne poked it in. So two errors from Lloris is very surprising for us. But fortunately, he's done so much for our club. He's earned so much capital with the fans that, nobody came away from this match like, oh, it's Hugo's fault, because we know how many points he's saved us in the past. So you just kind of go, wow, that sucked, and then just move on. But then we did get back in the match. Dele Alli scoring with his head yet again. It seems that that is a tool that he has now added to his repertoire, which must be very terrifying for opponents, because he wasn't already good enough with the pass or shooting from the floor. Now he's also got this kind of physical aspect to his game, which, you know, I don't think defenders really wanted to see. I will take a quick moment to say that I really hate watching Nicolas Otamendi play ever. I hate that he constantly acts like a tough man, but anytime anybody steps to him, he falls down and rolls on the floor. I just think you have to choose one or the other. I mean, at least Costa is good. Like, I don't understand what's going on with Nicolas Otamendi. I just very much hate his hair and also how he acts on the pitch. It's a little column A, a lot of column B, for sure. But anyway, I obviously like the way that Delali is improving, and he has seemed to get less petulant the better he's playing. I think he gets really irritated when he's not playing well, and that's when we saw so many of those outbursts at the start of the season, which I will not say was okay, ever. But it does seem like he's getting better control of that, and I think a large part of it is once he's really flowing, he doesn't have as much time to be angry because he's actually being engaged in play. So yeah, Delali did very well. Sun scored the second goal. A lovely back heel from Kane, by the way. But I will say, it's getting very frustrating to me seeing either on Twitter or in forums every team thinking that they're being slighted somehow. Like, I saw a load of Tottenham people saying, oh, if Ozil had had that back heel assist, it would have been on Sky Sports for a week. And like, okay, what good does that do? I don't understand. It was a very good pass. Sun scored it. Oh, I did just realize that I skipped what everybody's main talking point was, which was Kyle Walker pushing Raheem Sterling in the back. And I don't want to sound like a biased Tottenham fan, so I won't. It was definitely a penalty. And
that's why players dive. That is the whole reason why players dive.
Unfortunately, it is. But yeah, I mean, you just have to call it. You just do. And then the fact that we turned it around and scored almost immediately after that, I can definitely understand why Manchester City fans were aggrieved. I am of the belief that these things tend to balance out over a season. But we have been getting some favorable stuff, but kind of like my complaint about the whole Kane versus Ozil passing thing. I feel like every team's fan base has that group that always feels aggrieved. And then the group that's always like, oh no, you know, it'll come back to bite us. And so you just kind of have to find a neutral ground there. Although I will say that the refereeing standard has been difficult this season. We try to not bring it up every week because we know listeners don't want to hear that all the time. But it does seem like there's been an increase in poor decisions. And then you add on top of that the amount of visibility of all of these matches, and it just really kind of compounds itself. But all in all, I will absolutely take this point. A match in which Hugo Lloris was poor a couple times. A match where Wimmer was pulled at halftime and was largely awful. Again, sample size of one. I think we do need to stick with him in that spot to see if he gets better. But Kane was largely invisible in this match before that assist. You have Toby being injured. You had Jan that was already out. And then with all of that, we came away with a point away to a top six team. Absolutely, I'll take that every day of the week. And no, I'm not going to feel bad because we got a decision that went our way, because sometime later this season, I do feel like we're going to lose a match because of a decision like that. And that's just kind of how it ends up in this crazy league.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, while we're talking about the craziness of this league, I was doing some stats work and realized something very interesting, which is that the average points for each team is about 8 points higher than it was at this stage last year. The entire top four this season would have been first at this stage in the Premier League last season. So my question to you guys is this evidence of the Premier League on the whole continuing to improve and that it's a better season? And if it is, what do you think has really caused that kind of boon of late?
I don't think there's any doubt that this is a much better season than last year in terms of quality. But then again, I thought last season was the worst actually in my lifetime, at least as long as I can remember in the Premier League. I mean, the quality was dreadful. We kept on saying it. You know, I know Leicester fans may not appreciate me saying this, but in a normal Premier League season, Leicester would not have got close to winning the Premier League with that team. It was still an incredible achievement that they did it, but it wouldn't have been, you know, that remote possibility of them winning it wouldn't have been there in previous seasons. And the fact that, you know, this time last season, the team top of the table had 44 points. The team that this season, that points total at this point the season will put you in fifth. I think it does tell you a lot about the improvements there have been. I think it's largely down to the fact that last season clubs just, I don't know, I didn't feel like at the start of last season a lot of clubs really had strengthened their sides in the right way, that they had the right managers in place. Some of them probably knew they didn't have the right managers in place. I'm thinking specifically Manchester City, who knew they wanted Guardiola before even beginning the last campaign under Pellegrini. Last summer we saw huge spending by a lot of clubs. We saw new managers brought in and given, you know, considerable support by their clubs. And I think those managers have upped the game too. I mean, the arrival of Guardiola has made others up their game. Klopp has made people up their game. Conte has just taken the league by storm. Even a rejuvenated Mourinho, you can see the effect that he's had. You know, even though Manchester United are in sixth, I don't think there's any doubt in saying that they're a much better team than they were last season. So I just think over the summer, the teams at the top strengthened so much that it was bound to improve the league. And I think it's somewhere closer now to the standard that the Premier League really should be in my eyes.
Specifically for the top six, I think everyone's just woke up from the coma that was last year. What was it? City basically didn't try for the second half of the season. It's not that simple, but I'm going to put it simply. United got a much better manager. Chelsea, let's just act like Mourinho didn't exist last year because he basically wasn't Mourinho. So they got a much better manager. Liverpool, Klopp's had a full season and they got better players. Chelsea also got a better player in Conte. The top six is just strengthened as a whole. United also got a lot more talented. Arsenal probably haven't got better, but they were good last year, so they're still right there, and they've got luckier this year. And yeah, I would agree with Gitto that last year on the whole, but Premier League just wasn't great. It was fun and it was competitive, but like quality wise, it wasn't great. So yeah, I don't know what's caused the rest of the league to fix up, but the top six, I mean, it's just pretty simple adding of managerial and player talent.
And then like us, we just improved. We didn't really.
Oh, you guys had like this. Yeah, it was like we were so young. Knew what you wanted to do, and then everyone gets more time under Pochettino.
Yeah. John?
Just works.
Well, I think we're the exception to the rule where I think we were doing a little bit, but we had more points last season because.
Well, I think Leicester would be the exception to the rule. But,
yeah, Leicester as well. But you know what? And I keep on going on. We went second before December last year, very briefly for a few hours.
We had you on and talked to Champions League hopes.
Yeah, we were third. We were consistently fourth. And we were in the top six for a lot of the first half of the season. And it was only in the second half of the season we dropped away and finished seventh. But yeah, people were talking about Champions League. So, you know, we've got 28 points from 22 games. I think I haven't looked at what we were last year.
I think it was 35, if memory serves.
Yeah, I was going to say we were a lot better. We were almost safe.
What was it? So, seven? Yeah, it was 35.
So, absolutely, you know, normal service has resumed. You know, it was a topsy-turvy season last year. And people were in positions and they had no right in being. And
like how Palace had 31 points at this time last year and now they don't.
Well, look at Leicester, right? They were in a relegation. I don't know where they are at the moment. But they were in a relegation.
They're 15.
They're still in a relegation dogfight. Yeah. No. Has suddenly the Tinker Man become a bad manager? No. It just shows you that the unpredictable nature of it. But at the end of the day, the amount of money you spend on transfers and wages has a direct effect on your on the amount of points you earn and your league position. I'm sorry. But that's just the way it is. And I think like the other guest said, you know, it was a topsy-turvy season. And probably West Ham are where they probably should have been last season, which is around about mid-table in 10th.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, the top six are very much the top six in spending. So we have kind of seen a regression.
Yeah,
well,
I think wage bill is the highest way to correlation there is in soccer in general, at least in the Premier League. It just is.
I wonder if we're actually ahead of Everton with the Schneiderlin signing, because we have a lot of guys on low contract. But nonetheless, it does
that number should come out around like March or something. Don't they release it?
Yeah,
like a little bit
into really
the new year.
Also, we'll probably have signed like 19 more player contracts by then. So maybe,
that is true.
Maybe we'll be above that by that point.
Somehow, you guys are still getting everyone on low wages.
I know, it's
like
amazing.
Hugely
we still haven't fully broken our wage structure because Kane's contract was heavily incentivized, so we still haven't technically broken 100k, which is just absolutely bonkers.
Are football agents just bad? Like, are just,
you know agents? What? You know what the problem is for those football agents? It's that their players want to be at Tottenham right now. One day that may change for some of them, but that being as public knowledge as it currently is, has to really hurt your negotiating position. I mean that's the only way that this keeps happening. Because I agree with you, it is nuts. The amount
of
players
I think
have
it's
on
more
wages.
Of a general problem, not even just Tottenham. Like, there are some stuff that's like, that is, you know, players are on just significantly lower wages than they should be, and people think it's too high. Just, it's just weird. It's,
right.
Football wages should be higher, and they're not.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah, I agree with all of you guys. And kind of on the point of teams being where they were and where they should be, like I mentioned last season all the time, is that was not the best this Tottenham team was going to be, but that was our best chance at the title. I think the resurgences of Chelsea and Liverpool, both without European football, again, by the way, is really what has dragged this so far up. I mean, we were talking about the huge drops of Leicester and West Ham and Palace to an extent, but I mean, you want to look at the other way. Chelsea, who were dreadful last year.
Chelsea are 30 points better than they were at this point last year.
I mean, that's going to drag up that average. Quite
Liverpool are 14. That's the thing. Like, every average is just ruined by Chelsea and Liverpool.
Yeah.
Well, so I guess to be fair, Leicester and Palace average it out, but
right.
balance it out.
But it is pretty crazy. All right, that'll do us for the topic. Now we are going to head into Player Watch. We're going to quickly discuss players that impressed and disappointed in our club's most recent fixture. Gitto, seems harsh to ask you for a player that disappointed, so if you don't seem intent on saying anybody was awful, maybe two people that impressed, and it's possible they were both new signings.
Oof, that's a kind one. Yeah, I think it would be harsh to pick on anybody and say that they were in any way poor, because it was by far and away our best performance of the season, and I thought every single player turned up for the entire 90 minutes. I think Fernando Llorente is a good candidate for the player who had a really positive game, because he bullied Liverpool's defense, especially in the second half. But yeah, you're right. I'm going to go for the new players. I thought they just made such a big difference in positions where we've been really weak. Martin Olsen just slipped into that position as if he'd been playing for us for years. Looked very, very comfortable, very, very confident, both in defence and in attack. And Tom Carroll, a player who didn't really get much fanfare when he arrived here this week, just excelled, really, really did. He just took his opportunity. And, you know, it was quite incredible, really. They played like that, having played so little football for Spurs this season. But he looked very, very comfortable, very, very confident, both with the ball at his feet and when Liverpool had possession. And his cross for Llorente second is absolutely stunning. I really didn't know he had that
so
in his locker.
He basically crafted that entire move, too, because didn't he start it?
Yep, he played a really nicely weighted ball down the line for Olsen, and then just kept on going, joined, made the overlap, and then put in that stunning cross, which is the kind of thing that Llorente has been begging for all season but just has not been getting. And he showed what he can do when you do put a really nice cross in towards the edge of the six-yard area. He will attack and he will score. I mean, I'd like to point out to you as well that the Liverpool were poor. They had quite a few players who were very poor. I mean, a lot of Liverpool fans were having a real go at Emre Can and Dejan Lovren in that match, but I get the feeling that they're just scapegoats anyway, and that no matter how they play, they'll get stick. The one that that really stood out for me was Jordan Henderson, a player who has a lot of responsibility in midfield for keeping the ball. He gave it away far too easily, and not even with like testing passes. He just, for some reason, just spent the entire game pinging balls sideways about 30 yards without really doing much. I get the feeling when I watch Henderson sometimes when he's at his worst, he just tries spreading these passes when actually a little bit more intelligence on the ball would see him do shorter passes, maybe not spectacular, but you know, they'd get the team somewhere far quicker. He was really careless and looked very tired against Swansea. And John Henderson's a player who actually, as a person, I quite like. I really dislike his style of captaincy, but I do like him as a person. But on Saturday, I thought he was really poor.
All right, thanks. And Dan, for Arsenal, obviously it was a very strange match, but who stuck out in this one?
Well, if the match only lasted 64 minutes, I'd have said Granit Xhaka, but it doesn't.
It doesn't, right.
Doesn't. It's so weird, 90 minutes. Who came up with that? 64, it's obviously how it should be.
Like Nintendo 64, it's where it got its name.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. So with the match being 90 minutes, it actually becomes a lot harder. I'm going to say Aaron Ramsey, I guess. Yeah, I'll go with Ramsey. He was pretty good. He did his job in midfield. Obviously, it was easier when we had 11 men and weren't defending. But no, he did well getting forward. He's done well his last couple games next to Xhaka. It'll be interesting how he does next to Coughlin, because it's a totally different kettle of fish with him. But he was good, and he needs to get credit when he's good, because he really doesn't. Fans are very harsh on him. Love you, Aaron. But for players that was bad, I'll go with Olivier Giroud. He's been good. He had a very off game. Burnley just bottled him up completely. I think he only had two shots. Neither were on target. I think one was from outside the box and off target. The other was blocked. He didn't have a good game. It happens. He probably should have been taken off earlier than he was, but again, bad game. It happens. He's been good. It's fine.
Also, you know who's really good? Michael Keane.
Who? Yeah, he's pretty good.
He's going to go for big money soon.
Yeah. He's better at football his feet than, like, you know, you'd expect a Burnley center back to be. Yeah. Shots.
Yeah, so on Player Watch, well, it's a difficult one because so many players are shining at the moment. I mean, Andy Carroll scoring two goals and tower of defence is worth a mention. I've already mentioned Mikel Antonio, three assists, a hat-trick of assists at the Palace game. But, I mean, Lanzini as well, you know, coming in. It's difficult to choose between those three, but I think everybody's really stepping. I'm going to go for Andy Carroll. Look, he doesn't get enough credit. He gets a lot of grief. He's had a lot of troubles. Andy Carroll is my hero in the recent games and the one that I think that is a player. If I remember the format, I've got to also say a player that hasn't impressed.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's very simple for me this week, and it is Aaron Cresswell.
Yeah.
He is an amazing left back, and you know, he's one of the success stories like Mikel Antonio and like Vardy, who's come from the Championship and made good. And he's done so great for this club. But he had an awful game against Borough, you know. Not only did he nearly score an own goal where he hit the crossbar, where he didn't see a man behind him. Everybody, you know, thousands of people saying "man on, man on," but he just poor defending. He didn't track back. He just seemed off the pace. I'm hoping he just puts it down as an off game, as any player can have. And maybe we've got too high expectations of him. But I'm afraid I'm going to put Aaron Cresswell in the naughty bin for West Ham at the moment. And hopefully he'll listen to this and pick up his game for Man City.
Yeah, for Tottenham, Victor Wanyama has to be the player that impressed. I mean, he not only was he imperious in midfield, and he really has been ever since we changed to this back three. Those that listen to the show often will know that there was a period where I was saying I thought Eric Dier should replace him. That was when we were in the 4-2-3-1, and it was just because Wanyama has a very limited game. Now, what he does well, he's arguably the best player in the league at, which is, you know, strength on the ball, muscling people out, getting tackles. But I was worried about his passing, because in a 4-2-3-1, that position needs to at least be able to contribute somewhat. But this switch to the back three has allowed him to constantly drop into the back line and just kind of break up play in midfield wherever he needs to. And we're really seeing the best out of him. And all of a sudden, that $11 million for him looks like one of the best deals of the offseason. He has been so great for us. And then, midway through the match, well, really around the hour mark, Toby Alderweireld got hurt. He wasn't quote-unquote hurt, but he said he felt his hamstring and that if he played any longer, he felt like it could snap, which is not something you want to hear. So hopefully he does get well, but we had to slide Wanyama back into the back line with Eric Dier. So we had our two best defensive midfielders partnered as our center backs, and they both did very well, but Wanyama was just the natural. He was getting headed clearances, normal clearances, his shading of the ball, trying to force it back into the middle of play, I thought was terrific. And it really... his versatility is amazing. And as I said, when we play this back three, a lot of times when we attack, you'll actually see one of our three center backs getting forward a little bit. Wanyama then drops back into that line just to make sure everything is all neat and tidy. So we have quote-unquote seen him in the back line before, but to see him given that designated role and do so well was a very positive thing to see. Because it means we have another option back there, worst case. I mean, the possible negative is that while we do have a lot of cover, we have a lot of players that are also needed other places. So, like, if we did need to use Wanyama as a center back going forward, that means that we'd have to do Winks and Dembele. And while Winks did turn the game on its head a little bit because of his passing, funnily enough, when he came on, I'm not super confident with Winks and Dembele as a partnership long term. It worked for 30 minutes. But that would be the problem with being like, oh, well, Wanyama can just fill in that back line for a while, is that not so much. We need him much more in midfield, I think. But the fact he was able to deputize there so well was very, very impressive. As for somebody that disappointed, I kind of mentioned in my open, there were several. Wimmer was very, very disappointing, but as I mentioned, only got 45 minutes, and I think a lot of that's that he hasn't really played in the three with us yet. But he's very mobile. He's played left back before, so I don't think he's going to have any issues stylistically. I just think he has to get used to it. I think the big one is obviously Hugo Lloris, who usually is a phenomenal keeper for us. Definitely one of the three best keepers in the Premier League. I don't think anybody would argue that. It's just what order you put them in. But he obviously had a bit of a nightmare. Although he did make some crucial saves. I mean, they got a lot of shots on us in this match, and he did save plenty of them, but those two errors are just so out of character for him that, unfortunately, you kind of have to give him that label. And kind of like Christian Eriksen, I'm not, you know, condemning Hugo forever. This was just obviously not a dream performance for him. All right, and that'll do it for us today. So if you'd like to tell folks where they can find you or any projects you're working on, now would be a good time.
Thanks for having me. If you want to hear more Swansea City positivity, you can find it at the Jackcast. We will be recording on Tuesday night, and you should be able to find that at the Jackcast.
All right, thanks for having me on. I'm still Dan, and you can still catch me on Twitter at @_jersey_fits.
So thanks for listening. I'm Sean Whetstone, a West Ham fan. You can find me on Twitter at West Ham Football. I've also write for two blogs. One of them's called westhamtillidie.com. The other one's called clarenthugh.info that brings all the latest West Ham news. And of course, we run our own West Ham podcast called more than just a podcast.co.uk, and more is in Bobby Moore, which is M-O-O-R-E. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Yeah, and I am your host, Kevin DeVries, at KevRuff on Twitter. You can also see some of our writings over at TheEaglesBeat.com. I also host the FPL Roundtable, which you can find on the same Twitter feed or the same podcast feed, which you're already listening to. So way to go, you. Those will be at odd times this week because we don't have Premier League matches at the weekend. They're a little bit shifted to the Tuesday, Wednesday following. So just kind of keep an eye on both the EPL Roundtable Twitter and my personal one, and we'll kind of let you guys know as soon as we know what that schedule is going to look like. I also have something really exciting in the pipeline that I don't think I can announce yet, but when I can, I'll plug that a whole lot more. So until then, you're stuck with the suspense. But thank you guys so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code Program.